What's up, everyone? I'm Will Fulton, and this is Thrillist's Best Podcast. Look, I don't know about you, but I've definitely been watching more movies about fictional apocalypses and large-scale disasters since I've been in quarantine and we've all been experiencing a large-scale disaster in our own lives. It might seem a little counterintuitive, but to me, it's kind of like listening to some sappy Bon Iver song after a breakup, or maybe watching Cheers on your iPhone at a bar. I miss bars. Damn. Well, anyway, apparently I'm not alone here, at least with the disaster movie stuff. Our entertainment team recently put together a list of the definitive disaster movies of all time, including Independence Day, San Andreas, The Day After Tomorrow, Twister, Armageddon, and more. I'm about to talk with some of the writers and editors who made the list to get their takes on what constitutes a disaster movie in their minds. If Dante's Peak is indeed better than Volcano, we'll settle that old debate. Why you should definitely watch The Core at least once. It's a fucking wild movie. And much, much, much more. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Okay, I'm here with three members of Thrillist Entertainment Team. Staff writer Emma Stefanski. Hey, Emma. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. I'm ready to talk disasters.
Of course. And senior staff writer Dan Jackson. Good day to you, Dan Jackson. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. And executive editor and my close, dear friend, John Sellers. John, how are you? I'm sorry I said that we were close friends. That's my bad.
You're my best friend.
Yeah, that's why I feel bad. I was underselling our friendship. So,
Hi.
So you all put together, with the help of the whole entertainment team, 20 disaster movies you should absolutely watch right now. It's a really good article. But why right now? Is the immediacy just an editorial style thing, or have you actually found yourself watching more disaster movies as we live through this real-life disaster, the coronavirus pandemic?
I have been going down a disaster movie rabbit hole, and it has been one of my favorite rabbit holes, in the sense that it is so bleak every time I look at the news. But it's never as bleak as when you see the news in a disaster movie.
Right. So you feel better about your own self after seeing, you know, The Day After Tomorrow, for example.
For those 2 hours, and then I read the news again, and then I'm miserable. But yes, it definitely has this, like, curative effect that immediately goes away once reality sets back in. But that's the whole point, is to distract yourself a little bit.
For sure. Emma, what do you think? Have you been watching more disaster movies? Not just for this article that you had to work on, but for your own personal viewing habits.
I guess I kind of have. I think a lot of them, and I mean, this is probably true all the time, but there are a lot on streaming right now. So I've just sort of been going through and seeing, like, oh yeah, like, here's a fun, like, blockbuster, cool movie with weird science that I can just watch and not have to think about anything else for 2 hours. Like, my friend recommended The Core to me, and I had never seen it before. So, and it's on Netflix now, so I watched that. And then John has been watching all these movies, and so I told John to watch The Core, and then he watched The Core, and then we, you know, this list sort of, like, ballooned out of that. Not saying that's all my idea, but it is all because of me.
So two things we learned. It's all your idea, and secondly, the core of this list is The Core. That's what spurred the whole thing. Dan, what do you think about all that, everything that's been said so far about this article that you wrote on?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a pretty accurate representation. I was like a kind of an unwilling participant in this. Like, I have not been watching a lot of disaster movies. So this, I'm kind of like the guy running away from the big wave that John and Emma built. But now I'm riding the wave, to continue the metaphor, because I've started digging back into some of these disaster movies as part of working on this list. Because honestly, my first impulse with all the stuff going on was not really to watch disaster movies,
right?
Because they're not necessarily my favorite type of movie, for reasons that anyone who's seen a bad disaster movie probably understands. But I've been enjoying getting back into them. They have a lot going on, and they're kind of a fun break from things, and they provide sort of an interesting way of looking at stuff. So I've enjoyed riding the wave, even though I was not necessarily a willing participant in the beginning.
Yeah, you're riding the tidal wave, much like a Snake in Escape from Los Angeles, if you're familiar with that film.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I think first, how are we defining disaster movie here? You know, Emma, you pointed out that Wikipedia, which of course is my main reference for cinema always, splits disaster movies into two categories, natural disasters and end of days. And also, I think it's pretty funny, under natural disasters, one of the movies is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I think is really funny. But your list is a little more nuanced. It runs the gamut from Armageddon to World War Z with things like Titanic, The Day After Tomorrow, Twister in between. Dan, what qualifies as a disaster movie in your mind?
Yeah, we talked about this a lot. I would say disaster movies tend to have a sense of, there's this, I think it's about two things. It's about scale and spectacle. So like there needs to be kind of like a big event that, you know, is shown to be affecting a lot of people. So that's kind of the scale part. And then, yeah, the spectacle part is pretty obvious. It's like the first thing you think of when you think of disaster movies, which is shit blowing up and, you know, dogs running and people running through the streets and just like peril and mayhem. You know, that's kind of those are like the two core parts of it. So if you have both of those, then you probably have a disaster movie. But as you get deeper into the sort of micro genres and types of disasters, it gets a little bit harder to untangle.
Right. So scale is important. That is that why, you know, John, we don't see something like a Jaws on here as a disaster movie? Because I don't know if you've seen Jaws, but that shark does make quite a mess. But is it too small of a mess to qualify?
Yeah, we have a couple of, there's obviously exceptions to every genre rule, but something like a Jaws, or you brought up before Godzilla, even though there's a lot of mayhem and a lot of destruction that is caused and a lot of nervousness that the characters go through, those are more monster movies. So that's why I would not really put the Jaws in there.
How do you guys feel about The Mist? Because there are lots of monsters, but it is kind of like an event. I think that, you know, without giving too much away, a lot of bad stuff happens. There's a lot of really scary things in it. Is that more of a monster movie to you than a disaster movie?
That's a horror movie.
That's a horror movie. Okay, so there's that. That's a distinction there for you.
A disaster movies aren't really horror movies, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's kind of an interest. That's like kind of a key point. Like, disaster movies aren't necessarily horror movies. They have elements of horror and suspense and thriller, but like they're a little bit different. They're kind of their own unique thing.
They're sort of like more fun. Like, obviously there are exceptions to the fun thing, like, because there are plenty of disaster movies that aren't exactly fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like The Impossible would be not funny.
No.
But there's definitely like, you're not scared watching them, really. Like, the stuff happening is obviously like, oh god, if that actually happened in real life, then, you know, we would be fucked. But the point is not to like frighten you. I think the point is just to sort of thrill you or you know, exhilarate you in some way
general.
Yeah, because they're kind of like these like anti-human movies. Like, you know, they're all like, they usually follow like a broad range of characters, and they're kind of like sentimental, but like the meat of them is often these like just kind of bizarre scenes of destruction and sort of like society collapsing, and the movie just kind of observes it happening, and you kind of sit there going like, oh shit, like I'm glad that didn't happen.
But I think first, like, just add some context around disaster movies. From what I understand, they did kind of rise to prominence in the 70s with films like Airport and Poseidon Adventure, and of course Towering Inferno, starring film legend OJ Simpson. John, as someone who was around in the 70s, is this where disaster movies kind of first hit their stride?
Wow.
Is that a bird? I was just... No, I'm trying to be real.
You guys are best friends? I don't know if I believe that.
That's why we can banter like this.
Our friendship is over. What was the question? I'm so lost.
What was the 70s like, John?
Yeah,
that was basically... Take us back. Tell me about Miles Davis. No, I think like Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure... Those films were kind of set the template for what disaster films were. Is that correct?
Yes. When I watched these, like everyone else on TV, much later, many years later, they did. Yeah. I mean, like the movie, you know, there's a reason that these were all parodied by the Airplane series. There were just a ton of them in the 70s. you know, the famous one, I would say like the most famous one is The Towering Inferno, which had Steve McQueen as a, you know, he's got to save people in the tower. Mm-hmm. Big tower. And it's on fire. What's up?
Bad news.
Yeah. And so that kind of like, race against time feeling, and you know, there's always another peril. Like that happened in the Poseidon Adventure as well, where, hey, it's just it's a luxury cruise. We're going to have a lot of fun. Not going to have fun because that ship is going down. Mm-hmm. And then a ragtag group of survivors, a lot of people died. But a ragtag crew of survivors, some are quippy. Some are definitely destined to die.
Of course.
In the next scene.
Of course.
And then there's the, you know, the heroic few. That kind of template was used over and over and over.
I think that I want to move on to some specific examples so we can start talking about some of these movies. It seems to me that climate-based disasters, including a couple that you just named, seem to be this subgenre's bread and butter. You know, you have The Day After Tomorrow, you have The Perfect Storm, you have Twister, which is a movie I do like, but it does have one of the most off-putting lines in cinema history for me. Bill Paxton calls Helen Hunt's ex-boyfriend a corporate kiss butt. I don't know if you remember that, but that kind of turned me off of the entire movie. I understand why they did it, PG-13, but you know, whatever. I want to ask you about one of these on the list that I haven't heard of, Emma, Geostorm. What is that about?
Oh my God. I mean, I think this does go into the sort of like, these movies are kind of an indicator of what the culture is worried about at a large scale. Cause like, I think a lot of the reason these movies had such a resurgence in the 90s was because of the year 2000 and like a lot of, you know, paranoia about that.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's, you know, Y2K and everything. And then there's people being like, oh, well, like doomsday, you know, folks going like, well, you know, that's it. That's all we get. 2000 years of the world. And then it's going to end probably. Right. Which
should
of course
have.
It
debatably,
wouldn't we be all better off?
Yeah.
It could also have ended already. And we were just like trapped in a computer now. And we just
simulation?
Don't know.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is that what Geostorm is about?
Geostorm. Thank you for putting me back on track.
No, it's my fault.
And this movie is about a system of like satellites that control the weather all over the world. And they can like create, they basically like, they shoot down storms before they happen and like hurricanes, you know, don't exist anymore and everything is great. But of course, if a bad person gets control of these satellites, they can do some real damage.
I bet.
Culminating in a geostorm, which is in fact a line of dialogue in the movie, that someone says there's going to be a geostorm, which is
it's amazing.
Cool.
That movie is so underrated.
It kind of is. I mean, it's very fun. It's very silly, and a lot of it is just like completely computer generated. But I had a good time watching it. I just think the title is funny.
The title is funny, and I think a lot of these, yeah, they are, you do want to watch them and just kind of have a good time, kind of like a roller coaster. Sellers, is Geostorm your favorite weather-based disaster movie?
I would say...
And volcano movies are definitely a big subset here, too, headlined, of course, by Dante's Peak and Volcano, the twin lava blockbusters of 1997. Volcanoes were huge in 1997, apparently. Dan... How does this phenomenon of the movie twins happen? I mean, we saw it here in 97 with these volcano movies. We'll see it again in 98 with Armageddon and Deep Impact, which we'll obviously talk about. How does this happen where two studios kind of make like ostensibly the same movie at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, it could be parallel thinking. You know, everyone's just like, you know, two different geniuses are like, what happens if a volcano blows up, you know? But I think there's also a competitive thing that happens with movie studios where they see one person has a volcano movie on their slate and someone else is like, all right, we need to get a volcano movie. And then you got two coming out or you got two asteroid movies. So, you know, I mean, it happens. I would say it happens less now, but you still get it occasionally where there'll just be two movies that pop up that have very similar premises or sort of topics and everyone gets to compare them and talk about Armageddon and Deep Impact, which is always fun.
Right. Like the most recent example I can think of is the Friends with Benefits those movies. There was two of them, one with Mila Kunis.
Oh, yeah. No Strings Attached was the other one.
Yeah.
And the first example I can think of are the two elephant movies, like Operation Dumbo Drop.
Yeah.
And then Larger Than Life with Bill Murray.
The two classics.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's like someone's thinking about volcanoes, someone's thinking about elephants, someone's thinking about, you know, relationships, I suppose. There's always, you know, just ideas buzzing in the air.
Low-hanging
we're always
fruit
thinking
for the
about
film industry.
We're always thinking about these three things. Elephants, volcanoes, relationships.
That's what my life mainly consists of, I have to say. Out of Dante's Peak and Volcano, this is an important question, the lava blockbusters of 97, which do you prefer? Because I think that Volcano was the bigger hit, but I think I definitely preferred Dante's Peak. Emma, what's your take here?
Dante's Peak is the one with Pierce Brosnan, right?
Yes. Correct. Volcano is Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes. Okay. I thought that Dante's Peak was a James Bond movie for a really long time. I saw it I saw it on TV like at my friend's house when I was quite young, and I think at that point like all the Brosnan James Bonds had sort of come out, and so we were both like, why do we know this actor? And then she was like, oh, he's James Bond. So I was like, okay, this is a James Bond movie.
Pretty much any movie with Pierce Brosnan becomes a James Bond movie. Yeah. So, you know, like Mamma Mia, James Bond movie, Mrs. Doubtfire, James Bond movie, you know.
There are just aspects of Bond in Doubtfire, I will say that. Lots of disguises, lots of deception, unrealistic scenarios. Yeah, well, so if you did think it was a James Bond movie, does that mean you liked Volcano better? That it made more of an impact on your life?
I don't know. I like Dante's Peak a lot. I think it's fun. I mean, there's obviously parts of it that aren't very not fun. And there's this particular scene that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
Acid Lake, when, old lady.
Oh, God. Yes.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
Yeah, everyone remembers Acid Lake.
This movie was on, like, at a bar maybe a year ago, back when, you know, remember bars?
Vaguely.
And I was like, I know this movie. I've seen this movie before. And then that scene happened. I was like, I know what this movie is. So it's very very cool. So that's sort of like, it's a movie that's been with me for my whole life, like my whole pop culture existence. So I think in that way, it's like the most familiar one to me. So I like it a lot.
It's a great one. It's probably one of my favorite disaster movies. John, where do you lie on the Volcano Dante's
Peak?
There's
only one right answer to this question. Okay. And it's definitely Dante's Peak.
Okay. I think that's
fair. Yeah, no question.
It's
first
also
of all,
a really sick title too.
It's like a great movie title. Dante's Peak is amazing.
It is. But the misnomer of Volcano is that it's like not really what you would think of as being a volcano. It's like an underground volcano that lava's up, bubbles up with lava and magma.
Yeah.
But Dante's Peak has the peak that blows its blows its top. You know, the big phenomenon of a what you would think of, like the Mount St. Helens style, you know, Mount Vesuvio type thing.
Sure. Sleeping giant.
It has a great, this is going to blow scene near the end of the movie that I won't spoil, though everyone knows it's going to blow. So it's not spoiling anything.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's volcano. It's got to blow at some point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Volcano is set in LA, and it's, you know, Tommy Lee Jones racing against time to like solve this problem. He's like a, you know, city disaster specialist. And it's really, but that one's like things are bubbling up from underneath LA, and the other one is like a small town in the Pacific Northwest, and that is being threatened. And meanwhile, there's a little romance.
Oh, of course, definitely.
Yeah, Linda Hamilton's in it.
There's a lot bubbling beneath the surface in Dante's Peak. Whatever the town was, the town called Dante's Peak. I feel like it might have been actually.
Had to have been. I can't remember.
I don't know. Well, you know. We can't talk. I don't think I can ever talk about lava or magma and film without now thinking of The Core, which is a movie that we've talked about a little bit here. And it's a movie that you guys all recommended I watched, and it's on Amazon Prime, so I did. I'm not even sure where to start with The Core. The setup is very complicated. It's not like, oh shit, there's a meteor that's going to crash into Earth in 10 days. you have to get like this TEDx talk during the movie with like a fruit and an aerosol can and a flamethrower. Out of the three of you, who is the biggest fan of the core and who could help make some sense of it right now for people who have never seen it?
I'll say Emma.
Okay, Emma.
Oh, God. I mean, look, I've tried to explain the quote-unquote science of this movie before and failed. Although you do get that, like, amazing, amazing scene. I'm going to say it's maybe one of the best parts of the whole movie where they, like, explain what's happening. And you sort of think that you can follow it. And then halfway through, you sort of realize, like, I'm not retaining any of this information.
Yeah, you totally can't. It's very confusing.
I think, like, I love the core because I love, like, action movie tropey cliche stuff. Like, I genuinely do enjoy that. Like, if a movie has a character saying something crazy and then another character, like, yells at them and says, "In English, please," I love that. The best every single time. It's good. It's funny. Never stop doing it. And the core is basically just like that kind of thing, but a whole movie of it. You get like your cool character tropes. You get your like unexpectedly cool character tropes, like Stanley Tucci's character, very cool.
What the fuck is with Stanley Tucci's character?
So amazing.
I watched this movie last night because you guys were pushing for it so hard, and I needed to, you know, understand it for the core cast that we're doing right now. Yeah. And like, his character is so bizarre. He's introduced like signing autographs and like wearing like a long black coat and like smoking a cigarette. Like he's this celebrity scientist. Like he's like Neil deGrasse Tyson meets like Steve Jobs or something.
Right, but and, he's like, in the administration, correct? He's like in the president. He's like a superstar, like cabinet member.
Well, loosely, he does say, he says, I'm due at the White House in 10 minutes. I don't have time for this. I think that's one of the first things he says.
Yeah,
because he's so cool.
Yeah, he's like, and he's just rude. He's just this rude scientist man who repeatedly throughout the movie like is like a coward. It's like, I don't know. It's such a bizarre. I mean, it's like a funny character. I enjoyed his performance, but I kept being like, who is this guy? Like, I just wanted to know more about him, and like, he should get his own spinoff. Honestly, I mean, he dies. Unfortunately, spoiler.
A lot of people die in the core. Actually,
everyone commits suicide. Everyone sacrifices themselves for the cause. It's such a weird movie. There's like scene after scene of person just being like, "Well, I guess I have to die now." And they go off and they die in like really agonizing ways. Yeah, but the movie kind of still has like a chipper tone. It's very, very bizarre.
It's very weird.
Which is weird after like your beloved, like favorite, you know, comic relief guys have like perished all in the magma, and then you get these two characters like having a little laugh about it.
So the plot of the core is really the core, of the Earth stopped spinning, meaning there are no magnetic fields anymore in our atmosphere, meaning a whole bunch of shit's gonna happen, basically. So a team of ragtag scientists, hackers, Stanley Tucci, Aaron
Astronauts.
Eckhart. Yeah, astronauts, Aaron Eckhart and his fucking chin. They all have to dig into the core of the Earth and save the Earth from kind of this convoluted apocalypse. This movie had so many disaster movie tropes packed into the first 10 minutes. You have Aaron Eckhart, who is the cool professor who's riffing with his students, and like for some reason he's the only one that is smart enough to fix this problem, some random college professor. He actually says, "I'm married to my work," within the first 10 minutes, which I thought was really funny. What are some other disaster movie tropes that you've seen throughout all of these movies? Because I do feel like there are always these common scenes and these common cliches that so many of these disaster movies showcase. John, what do you think here?
So to continue with the core, one of my favorite things in that movie is that there's scenes of destruction around the planet as this problem begins to manifest. And one of them is like, you know, it shows a scene in Rome, and the only thing that you really see getting blown up are the landmarks that everyone knows.
Right.
Because, you know, how else would you know where these disasters were taking place?
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Colosseum gets destroyed, and then in other movies, you know, like a lot of them directed by Roland Emmerich, like a White House or Empire State Building gets blown up. So that to me is a huge trope. But then probably my favorite one that I discovered while watching all these are the number of times that people are driving in a car and there's somebody in the back seat who says, go. And then the person looks in the car rear view mirror and you see, there's always a scene of the impending thing behind them coming after them. And then somebody in the back seat says again, like, really? No, we got to go. And then the guy goes, I know. And then they keep driving and, you know, eventually they'll get away.
Right.
Barely.
Right.
Yeah. That happened in like 2012. That happens in Dante's Peak. That happens in Geostorm. It happens in so many things.
Yeah. The other excellent trope that happens at the beginning, the very beginning of the core is, I think in the core, someone is like, oh, my watch stopped working. That's weird. Well, I guess that doesn't matter. That always happens. So it's like, oh, this is a weird thing, but you know, whatever. That's fine. Ends up dying.
Oh, and then there's always a dog that they rescue. Yeah.
Always a dog.
Like Independence Day is the best dog moment when there's the big explosion in the tunnel and like the dog somehow jumps over like, you know, 90 feet of cars. Yeah. And like dives to like Vivica Fox and her kid and they like rescue it. And it's just like all these people are dead, but you're just like, wow, I'm really glad that dog is alive.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a very quick break, but stick around. There are more disasters in store when we get back. We definitely want to talk about Armageddon versus Deep Impact, which is, you know, the volcano and Dante's Peak, but in 1998, that scenario. Whenever I think of disaster movies, I think these two pop up in my mind first. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment? Do you think for a lot of people, Armageddon and/or Deep Impact are their references for disaster movies?
I think for some people, probably. Like, I think Independence Day is probably, like, the one that most people have seen. I don't know I don't know if I can even say that, because I don't know, like, how many people have seen. I know, like, not many people probably have seen Deep Impact. I mean, like, compared to the amount of people who have seen Armageddon. I feel like an Independence Day also has, like, the, you know, you watch it every year, an Independence Day kind of thing, where right. It's like, you're going to, you know, see it at some point in your life.
Right. Well,
yeah, I agree with you in a way that Armageddon in particular is probably the one that most people would associate with this kind of, you know, the basic idea that there's an impending existential threat to humanity in the form of some sort of hurtling space object. That's like a big one.
Yeah, and like as a movie, Armageddon kind of represents like a certain idea of the disaster movie, which is just like kind of like the total junk food movie, you know, where it's just like, it's like, yeah, there is like, you know, a bunch of cities getting blown up and there's that sort of opening section, but there's also, you know, there's romance, there's comedy. I mean, romance involving like weird animal crackers. You know, there's that, you know, there's the Steven Tyler song. There's, you know, comedy with Steve Buscemi and like Owen Wilson's in it. And then it's like, oh, but it also has these big tearjerker moments at the end. You know, so it just kind of like hits all the notes in like the most bombastic kind of like aggressive way. So, and I mean, that's why it's obviously so divisive too. Why I think you can ask some people and they're like, oh yeah, Armageddon, a blast. And then other people are just like, what dog shit? Like, I can't believe people like this. So, I mean, in that sense, it's like a lot of disaster movies, like not for everyone.
Yeah, and I usually like dog shit, but I am not a fan of Armageddon. I much prefer Deep Impact. Its tone is all different. It's more, I hate to say the word realistic, but it is a slightly more realistic take, I feel, on what would be happening if a meteorite.
Wait, you're saying a bunch of oil riggers being sent to blow up an asteroid is not realistic?
They're the only ones who can do it.
I've really thought about this a lot. And
I don't know. I don't know about that take, right?
All right. Well, Dan, Armageddon v. Deep Impact, which do you prefer?
I'm going to have to side with the dumb junk. I like Armageddon. Ooh. I think Armageddon's a blast. There's a reason why it's in, you know, the Criterion Collection. You know, it's one of, you know, it's one of Michael Bay's finer movies. You know, he makes big shiny junk, and he was given the opportunity to make just like the biggest shiniest piece of junk possible, and he did it. So I mean, yeah, Deep Impact is kind of like ponderous. That's my main memory of it. It's too self-serious, which is not what I want in a disaster movie. I want something that is just kind of unapologetic about its goofiness.
That's a very fair point. Sellers, where do you fall on this?
I will take Deep Impact. I prefer comets to asteroids.
Okay.
First of all.
Very important, yeah.
Why?
It's got the fire as well.
A comet?
Fire trail. So it's got a mix.
Aren't comets made of ice?
They look cooler in the sky. Like, just look at the CGI. Look at what happens. You have like a rock that's coming at you, or you have like a fireball. What's cooler? You also have, Dan, you're so cynical. This movie is so sad, and it's so,
Yeah, I don't want to watch a sad movie. If I don't watch a sad movie, I don't watch a good sad movie. I don't want to watch Elijah Wood, like
Taylor Leone's character, the main character, she reconciles with her father at the end, and they stand on a beach as the huge tidal wave comes at them and kills them.
It is beautiful.
Like,
yeah.
Not to spoil this movie, but the main character dies. This is great.
Yeah, you know who doesn't die? Bruce Willis. Oh, wait, he does.
Yes, he does.
He does die, Dan.
What am I saying? Yeah. Armageddon. But this is a good point. Armageddon, he has just those same emotional highs as Deep Impact.
No, in Armageddon, that's not a high.
Oh, it's devastating. I mean, it's a total tearjerker moment. You're just bawling your eyes out. You're like, what a good dad.
Yeah. You
know? No, I'm so happy that he dies in that movie. He's such a bad character.
Oh, I do cry. I cry when Ben comes home and like hugs Liv. Ugh.
And the whole handshake, like I want to shake the hand that whole deal. Yeah.
I'm crying
now. I see everyone's point. I mean, I want to see... Yeah. The good thing about Deep Impact is you do see the comet, in this case, actually make contact with Earth. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a resolution there that I do appreciate.
Yeah, the money shot.
Exactly, so to speak.
Robert Duvall's aging astronaut is a fantastic performance, and I think he should have won an Oscar for it.
Do you really believe that, or are you just saying that?
Yes! What won the Oscar in 1998 that was better than his performance in that movie?
He'd be supporting, right?
Yep.
I didn't even remember that he was in that movie.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm like...
I forgot they were asking.
Ed Harris was in Armageddon.
Dan, that's how sublime it is. He just blends in.
Actor in a supporting role, 1998. You have Robin Williams, Good Will Hunting, who obviously won. Robert Forster, Jackie Brown, Anthony Hopkins, Amistad. Greg Kinnear, As Good As It Gets, which I like that movie a lot, underrated. Burt Reynolds, Boogie Nights. That's actually a pretty stacked category. I think maybe they just didn't have room for Robert Duvall's forgettable performance.
Yeah, right. Classic snub. One of those snubs everyone always talks about every year.
Justice all for right. Duvall. So next up, I want to set up a hypothetical question. Making your perfect disaster movie. So bear with me. We need a disaster, people that are starring, and the director. And no, we did not talk about this yesterday. No, we talked about it yesterday, so you had some time to prepare. But Dan, what would your perfect disaster movie be if you had to build it from scratch?
Yeah, you know, I'm not... First of all, we already have the perfect disaster movie. It's called Armageddon. So and we don't need, you know, there's no need to try to build the perfect disaster movie. Instead, I'm more interested in sort of like building an imperfect disaster movie. So I'm going to start with the disaster. I want a smog movie. Ooh. I feel like that's like, you know, we were talking about The Mist a little bit earlier, but like, I really want a good, like, just movie about smog and like the smog goes after people in a big cloud I don't know exactly how the smog is going to be disastrous, but it's bad, you know, obviously a climate change angle. And yeah, then as the cast, I want Colin Farrell as like the main guy. I don't know if he's like a scientist or if he's just a normal guy who's kind of like, you know, rugged and hates the smog. He lives in LA. He drives everywhere, you know. And then I was thinking, like, we got to cast his daughter probably because he's going to have a daughter that he needs to save. And I was thinking we could get like Billie Eilish or someone like that.
Oh, perfect. Super trendy.
To play his daughter. And then for the director, I was like, let's get Sofia Coppola to do this. Ooh. I want to see like, the kind of like moody Sofia Coppola disaster movie with like New Order songs on the soundtrack. And like, I don't know. I just think, that would be one where I would see the poster and I'd be like, all right, I'm down. This is a Sofia Coppola A24 smog disaster movie. Like, yeah, this sounds cool.
When I think smog, I do think Colin Farrell. So that's a pitch perfect casting.
Yeah, he loves smoking cigarettes. So. Yeah,
he is the smog. That's the twist. He brings it with him. Okay, I love smog. I would see smog. Sellers, what do you think here?
Okay, so we want the perfect disaster movie?
Yeah, your own perfect the question? Disaster movie.
All right, so this is the opportunity for us to talk about San Andreas. It is the perfect disaster movie. So here's who I would want to star in it. The Rock.
So San Andreas is an earthquake movie, right? The San Andreas Fault suddenly grinds whatever it does.
Yes. The tectonic plates. Who plays the Chicken Little in that? It's Paul Giamatti, the perfect Chicken Little. The movie kind of begins at the what's the name of that dam? The Hoover Dam,
Hoover
right? It begins
Dam.
At the Hoover Dam.
Right.
The Hoover Dam falls apart, and there's a great shot of the Hoover Dam breaking apart and water going everywhere. And then it shifts to LA where, hey, we have a hero played by The Rock.
Well, you're just describing San Andreas.
Yeah, I lost.
Is this
your hypothetical?
Yeah, this is not the prompt at all.
Okay. So then what happens is his daughter is actually in San Francisco with, his ex-wife's new boyfriend.
Of course.
Or fiance, and for some reason. And the whole movie is about The Rock and Carla Gugino reuniting to go save their daughter in San Francisco along the fault line. That is the perfect setup for a movie.
Yeah, that's not what we're supposed to be doing right now, though.
Okay.
I respect your reluctance to do the thing, but
then
we did our homework.
Okay, so who's starring in my theoretical movie that's based on this?
Yeah, you're not
it's
real.
Not
one.
The Rock.
Yeah.
Let's recast San Andreas then.
Okay.
Okay, so then it's Vin Diesel.
Okay.
Vin Diesel is starring in this movie.
What's the difference, really, though?
The disaster, I mean... instead of being about an earthquake along the San Andreas fault line, it is a volcano explosion movie in, let's say, the Pacific. How about Hawaii?
Okay.
And who's directing this? I am going to go for the director directed by. No, that'd be stupid. I was going to say Bong Joon-ho. Bong Joon-ho's Volcano.
Okay, dude, you're thinking about this very pragmatically. In a boardroom full of Hollywood suits, I do feel like this would sell. It's San Andreas, but with Vin Diesel in Hawaii with a volcano, directed by Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
I feel like that would work.
Thank you.
Emma, what is your not real movie that would be your idea of a perfect disaster movie?
Okay. Picture this. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Love it.
Playing
already.
Yeah. A like botanist, like naturalist, sort of science-y type character. And the president calls her and says, hey, whatever her character's name is, the plants of the world have turned against us and they're now like releasing toxins into the air. They're causing landslides and earthquakes and something. We need you to figure out what's going on and how to stop it. And it's directed by John Carpenter.
Ooh.
Boom.
Oh.
A little spooky. Ooh, I like that.
Poison
Ivy?
There's going to be a lot of like practical effects of like weird plant stuff. So I feel like he would be good.
So is it all plants?
Well, because what I was thinking about this was the show Zoo, which I think was on CBS, which the premise of the show is the animals of the world have turned against humanity and are now trying to kill us, like every single animal.
Sure.
But I feel like it would be cool to do it with plants. So that's my idea.
I like that. The most, I wonder what the most, you know, besides the poison ivies, the poison sumacs of the world, I feel like Venus flytraps could be a problem
Oh,
in
yeah.
this scenario.
All the like carnivorous plants, they start growing like really big, like, you know, eating human sized. Yeah. A lot of good ideas here.
All right, so my disaster movie, it's based on a historical event. It's based on the Great Molasses Flood of 1919 in
I
Boston.
almost did this one. I was looking at the Wikipedia page.
I was worried that someone would, because it's so ripe for the pick. If you're not
Yeah.
familiar, in Boston, in 1919, of course, there was a large storage tank. I think it was filled with almost like 3 million gallons of molasses. It broke. A 40-foot wave of molasses ripped through downtown Boston, injuring hundreds and killing 21 people. So here, my cast would be an ensemble of Boston All-Stars. We're getting Ben Affleck and Matt Damon back together. You got Mark Wahlberg. You have Rachel Dratch. Conan O'Brien. Big Poppy makes an appearance. Michael Bay will direct and add a lot of explosions. I would call it. I have two title options. Either Sticky Waves in the Back Bay or Molasses with a big exclamation point.
I like that.
And I feel like
You know,
the
you
movie.
wanna
What? Yeah, please.
the thing that turned me off was the Boston element of it. I was like, there are too many Boston movies. And I feel like you've gone the wrong direction by casting all these Boston people. We need to, because the molasses flood is a great idea, we need to move it to a different city. Boston is just too played out. All those actors that would be annoying in a Boston disaster movie. This sounds like the most irritating. They're all slipping on molasses and like wearing period clothes. Like, this sounds like the most miserable movie.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of molasses in people's girdles and things like that. Well, I feel like you would tell it because the thing is, people say, oh, on hot days, you can still smell the molasses. So I'm picturing like an old Matt Damon, like from Saving Private Ryan, like his grandkid maybe says, I can smell the molasses, and his eyes kind of glaze over. And he goes into this tale of that, you know, that fateful day in January, many years ago. But I could see how this would be very annoying, also, to be fair.
Yeah,
This
I just
sounds
think
like
you
an
could.
episode of Drunk History.
Yeah, like I think you could move it to another city, and just kind of like take the idea of the molasses thing and like update it to now, you know? Like that's what I want to see. Like, you know, like kind of how like War of the Worlds, like the Tom Cruise Spielberg one, they made it set in the present day. So it's like I want to see a molasses flood in 2020, you know?
Yes.
Yes, except for instead of molasses, how about lava?
Yeah, well, now you're just doing
No.
Dante's speak. Well, the thing
Yeah.
about molasses, I don't think there are these giant molasses towers anymore. I could be wrong. I don't keep up with that stuff, but.
It is sort of
Yeah,
cool to
maybe that's
think
part of the
about.
premise of the movie.
Like the.
2020, Detroit.
Richard Schiff is like, we got to build a big molasses tower. And you know they do that in like Portland or something, and then it blows
There's
up,
like.
and you know it floods the
Ooh, oh,
floods
I
the
like
city.
there's one.
The greedy capitalists, they set up an illegal molasses plant that they're kind of like
Yeah.
covering, and then that sets off a series of disasters. Okay, I see where you're
Oh, I just figured out what my hypothetical, my actual, not San Andreas one. It's basically it's Succession, the entire cast. Everything about it, except for there's now a volcano
Okay.
that's about to blow its top.
Active
And
volcano. Okay.
yes, guest starring Richard Schiff.
Do they
With a
own it all?
crossover, with a Billions
Oh my God.
crossover that has Paul Giamatti coming in.
It's too
That's my
much.
movie.
That's
No, it
not a
isn't.
movie.
There's a
Do
lot
they
going on
own
in that
the
movie. No,
do they own the
Dan, you say too
volcano?
much. That is specifically a blockbuster and specifically a disaster movie. Too much. That's what you want.
John, you're just
I guess that's
describing
true.
your Succession Billions crossover fan fiction.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about our favorite disaster movies overall of all time. Okay, we did these hypotheticals. We talked about underrated. I just while you know running out of time a little bit, but I just want to get each of your singular picks for your favorite disaster movie based on the criteria that you yourselves created. Dan, what's your favorite disaster movie?
I feel like I kind of need to say Armageddon because I've been writing so hard for it throughout this podcast. But I'm going to go, I think I'm actually going to go with, I really like War of the Worlds, the Spielberg, Tom Cruise one. Like, I just think that's a great disaster movie. And yeah, it's very good. It's on HBO Go at the moment. I watched it last night after The Core to sort of wash The Core out of my brain. So I highly recommend it.
Double feature. I like that. I've also watched it recently and I liked it better than I thought I would. Emma, what do you think?
I mean, I guess I'm going to have to stump for The Core because it rules. It's like the perfect fun, silly, nothing is realistic about it. All the characters are your favorite character. Everyone's great. The cast is good. The premise is not scientifically sound, but who cares?
Who cares in this
and
context?
There are a lot of like crazy deaths, which is sort of like another morbid reason why people like these movies. It's just like, oh god, how, in what ridiculous way will people die this time? And that movie's just full of it.
Of course.
So
love those deaths. Love those magma deaths. Sellers, what's your favorite disaster movie of all time?
The cops are coming for you.
Sure.
No, that was, they came in with laundry. Sorry. What was the question? Say it again.
Your all-time favorite disaster movie, just overall.
Okay, so I'm going to decide this as I'm talking.
Okay.
I'm kind of a old school. You guys know me. I like stuff from the 90s and stuff.
Sure.
But you know, it's weird. I'm either going to go with Geostorm, which I watched for the third time last night. It's just endlessly entertaining in its ridiculousness and. You know, or San Andreas, which, as I've said, is literally the perfect. I think that's why they greenlighted it, right? It was like somebody said, like, okay, we got a perfect disaster movie with The Rock, or you know, The Rock's in it. He's trying to get from to save his daughter, save the world, save the state at the very least, mm-hmm. And it just has it all. It has it all. It has The Rock. It also has the dazzling special effects. It's funny the way that it plays out too, because it's got the earthquake, it's got the buildings collapse, it's got the wave, the tidal wave.
Yeah.
They keep adding. It's got the flood. So it's basically all of these. It's all consuming. It consumes all other disaster movies as the movie goes through it, and there's also a you know, marginally happy ending.
So if I'm understanding you, it's San Andreas is better than like Titanic is what you're saying. And San Andreas should have won Best Picture in the year it came out.
Okay. There needs to be an award show that it's just about disaster movies probably, or just movies that are awesome. And I'm going to say that this is 100% like fun and awesome. Titanic. Not fun.
It's pretty awesome, though.
Pirates are fun. Yeah,
is it?
It inspires awe in me every time awesome. I watch it.
I mean, it does have Billy Zane in it. It's got a killer Billy Zane.
Yeah, it's got a love story. I mean, you got to have a little love in these disaster movies, or else it's not going to be as impactful, you know?
Yeah, I mean, basically that's just the Towering Inferno on a boat, though. Ultimately,
which I think. I, for my pick, I would say I do like The Towering Inferno. I think it's like it's very fun. It's very 70s. It's super silly. It's super fun. I feel like a lot of people haven't seen it. So
solid
pick. It's the OG. Well, this was fun. I would say we averted disaster narrowly a couple times during the recording of this very podcast. So we should all be proud of ourselves for making it through. Emma, if people want to find you on the internet, where can they do so?
You guys can find me on Thrillist.com writing my stuff, writing about disaster movies and other kinds of movies and TV and, you know, whatever. And you can also find me on Twitter at Stefabski. It's my last name with a typo in it.
A typo on purpose. There should be a word for that. Dan, what about you? Where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Daniel V. Jackson. Yeah, I'm there. You can yell at me about Armageddon.
I think people like Armageddon. I think that's your most populist pick since you've been on this podcast. You usually go for the deep cuts.
Wow.
Went for Armageddon this time, which I like. Well, I mean that in a good way. Sellers, what about you? Do you want people to find you? If so, where?
Don't find me.
Okay.
But I am on Twitter, and I'm also just everywhere you think of disaster movies.
Exactly. Speaking of disaster, you guys hear that siren?
That sounds like a good way to end this.
All right. The 20 best disaster movies you should watch right now is on Turtles.com. Find all three of these people. Guys, thanks for coming on and talking disasters with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It was fun. Awesome. We survived. Woof.
We did.
All right. Big thanks to our guests and the people who put this whole thing together. Mia Fask, Jim D'Amico, Megan Kirsch, Brett Kushner, Emily Felt, and from iHeartRadio, Mangesh Hattakudar. This episode was edited and mixed by Dan Byrne, who helped us avoid many, many, many disasters over the course of the episode. See you all next week. Have fun out there.